This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com. The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
You know, before we get started with episodes of the Paracast, Randall and I have a conversation sometimes with our guests about something having nothing whatever to do with the paranormal. Sometimes it's about pop culture. This time it was about George Burns and Gracie Allen. And unless you're of a certain age, you will not know who they were. Or maybe you will. Because they were both former vaudevillians. They became famous on radio and on TV. But George Burns became famous in the movies for playing God. I'm serious.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, God, with John Denver, right?
That's right. John Denver was a foil, and God was, and they also had a movie called Oh God, You Devil, where George Burns plays both.
And how we got onto this, I think I've already forgotten. It was before the show, when we were saying, Preston Dennett, who is here joining us today, we were saying just how much he's one of our favorite people. Then you'd got into this George Burns quote where you were suggesting I wasn't actually being entirely forthright about that. So, Preston, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I'm really glad Gene cleared that up. We're really in the midst of quite a crisis going on here with all the government and everything else. So maybe a little laughter is good for us. I just pulled up a George Burns quote. Okay, here we go. Too bad all the people who know how to run the country are busy driving cabs and cutting hair. I don't know how funny that is, but I mean, you know, I think there's something to be said for being in touch with the common person. And that sometimes all these people up there in those ivory towers, they're out of touch.
Now, yes. The other thing I was really going to talk about in terms of trivia is a famous group or informal group of session musicians from the late 50s through the late 60s called the Wrecking Crew. All right? You never heard of the Wrecking Crew, right? But you sure know the songs they worked on. Like a woman named Carol Kay, who did bass and guitar, and you recognize her for Good Vibrations and Gone Only Knows by the Beach Boys. These Boots Are Made for Walking, Nancy Sinatra, she created the bass line. Mission Impossible theme, Hawaii 5-0 theme. Sonny and Cher, Roger McGuinn, of course, from The Birds. They played on Mr. Tambourine Man, The Carpenters, Bobby V. Jan and Dean, Simon and Garfunkel, Glenn Campbell was one of them, all right? You get the point.
How much do they do that anymore, though? It seems like we've always got these sort of upfront personas out there. Like, how much stuff do they actually write that's their own?
Well, the thing is here, nowadays, I think more and more musicians do it all themselves. And that goes back to the days of the Beatles and the days of the Rolling Stones where, yeah, sometimes session people came in there to play instruments they couldn't play. So early on, George Martin would do piano for the Beatles until John and Paul became reasonably proficient and did it themselves. Or they brought in a horn player for Penny Lane. Or, of course, George Harrison brought in Eric Clapton for While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And while they were all fighting when Eric Clapton showed up, they behaved themselves. Billy Preston, of course, was the only person ever to be listed by name on the Beatles recording for Get Back. So, yeah, they did. But earlier on, a lot of the people you know would hire session musicians because they can get in and out quickly. They were professionals. They come in there and they do a couple of takes and leave. they could do a dozen recordings a day. Whereas a band may be great at performing in public on stage, but doing it in the recording studio was not as efficient. So another example, of course, is the Monkees, obviously. The Monkees had musicians doing their stuff, not that they didn't know how to play. You know, for example, Peter Tork and Mike Nesmith were great guitarists, but they didn't really play in the early days, except for Pleasant Valley Sunday. Mike Nesmith was the only person who could figure out that guitar lick. So that's kind of like the early rock and roll. You want to get in there in the studio. Studio time was expensive. You had these session musicians, mostly L.A.-based, who would do that. There was also a band who worked out of the Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, with Rick Hall. Why are we talking about this? I think because at times like this, we can use a little trivia. But we're going to talk here about a book, one of many that our friend Preston Dennett has written. It's called Onboard UFO Encounters, True Accounts of Contact with Extraterrestrials. And Preston, in putting this together, you got cases that we haven't really heard about before, correct?
That's right. None of these have been published before. They're all my own personal investigations over a number of years. 15 chapters, each one involving a person who's been taken on board a UFO. 10 men, 5 women. Yeah, these are all brand new cases. I think a lot of UFO books out there kind of just rehash old stuff. So I really want to get new information out there.
How did you come to assemble these cases? Obviously, you're known as a UFO, a paranormal investigator, but how did you come across these?
I've got a pretty wide network. One came from a friend of my sister's who worked at the Renaissance Fair. I met him while I worked there 1 year. Others come from people who hear me on, you know, radio shows like this. A number of people contact me after reading my books or at conventions. I've had people approach me. So all these different ways, you know, personal connections, family connections, through my website. There's a lot of people out there, I'm telling you. This is just 15 cases. I think this is probably a very widespread phenomena, people being taken on board.
I think the larger question, and this takes us back before we get to the cases, to discussions we had with people like Jerome Clark, who separates the UFO sighting from the experience, saying they're real, but maybe not necessarily related to UFOs, even though they had something happen to them that is, for them, real, only maybe we don't understand the cause fully. But based on what you're telling me, and we'll get into some of the case histories in a moment, Preston, you feel that these people who say they were examined by ETs, all this stuff, that they are describing what happened to them, not something that happened that they interpret this way.
Absolutely. They all have their own interpretations. I'd say the vast majority of people in this book certainly feel like they are dealing with extraterrestrials in the classic sense, biological beings like us, but not all of them. There's one person who feels like probably they'd be better explained as angels. Another who feels they could very well be demonic. Another who's not convinced he's dealing with extraterrestrials. He's had a wide variety of paranormal phenomena. He feels like it puts on different masks. I think Jerome Clark sort of came to that sort of conclusion, as Jacques Vallée and a number of other leading researchers. It's not entirely clear that all of these are extraterrestrials as we would think of them. I still think that that's the explanation that best fits the evidence. And, these things are leaving landing traces. There's a case in the book, a couple of them, where people are not where they're supposed to be. They're physically missing. They come back with physical scars, bleeding. So this is clearly a physical phenomena. I don't think it's psychological. I think there are psychological and paranormal aspects, but I think it's a mistake to start lumping near-death experiences and into the same explanation as UFO abductions. Or I don't think we should lump all the phenomena together. Clearly, there's very strong relationships between them that we don't understand.
You know what? We're going to understand these announcements. You get back with Preston Dennett. With Gene and Randall, you're in.
The Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items, and entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Attention all radio listeners who still need food supplies. If you've thought about the implication of food-related supply chain disruptions and are concerned about the coming quarantines, this will be the most important message you will ever hear. Here's why. In the next few days, all Americans will face extremely hard choices. If we've learned anything from China and Italy, it's that quarantines and enforced lockdowns are just a few days away here in the U.S. Listen, while dehydrated food is becoming scarce, you can still get enough open pollinated heirloom seeds to grow a 1-acre crisis garden. The truth is, growing nutrient-dense vegetables in the days ahead may actually be the single most important thing you do. Go to SurvivalSeedBank.com and watch the new video to understand the nature of the threat. This could be life-saving. Lockdowns can last from 6 to 8 weeks. Get free bonus seeds. Special quarantine reports, too. Go to SurvivalSeedBank.com. That's SurvivalSeedBank.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you, too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
Hi, Peter Vaccaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com, ParanormalDate.com, and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Joining us again, our old friend Preston Dennett, and I had a magazine called Caveat Emptor many years ago. He wrote a couple of pieces for it, and he's been very active in paranormal research for year after year, written many books on the subject, his latest being Onboard UFO Encounters. Now, obviously you get around, Preston. How did you come across these particular cases, and how did you vet them to see that whatever happened to these people, they are speaking honestly about what they think happened?
Right. Yeah, from a wide variety of sources, it's always, you want to be careful when you're vetting a story. Initially, I do a initial interview, not recorded, just sort of testing the waters. Most people are contacting me. So I, you know, patiently listen to their story, help them if I can. So that's always my first priority. It's not like, this is, you know, a great story. It's, you know, how can I help the witness? I get a lot more cases that I don't actually, you know, write about. If it progresses to a level of a full investigation, I will, you know, of course, do a series of interviews, try to get, what do you call it, supporting witnesses, of course, referrals. You know, it's always great to talk to some spouse or brother or whoever else was there during an encounter. But I have to tell you, you can tell pretty quickly right off the bat whether a person is sincere. They're often very nervous about revealing their encounters. They say stuff like, you know, I don't have any history of mental illness. I don't do drugs. You know, I've got a good job. I'm well educated. This sort of thing. It's not at all unusual for witnesses to become very emotional as they describe their accounts, to the point where, you know, they're openly weeping. So it becomes pretty clear that these people are telling the truth from that standpoint. A number of them have been able to send me, you know, perhaps doctor's reports or photographs that support what they're saying to some extent. To a large extent, we are, you know, dealing with eyewitness testimonies only. There's not a whole lot of physical evidence. It's one of the frustrating things about researching this phenomena.
In contrast with our last guest, Sarah Scholes, who was also an absolutely delightful guest and author of They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers, what you're just describing is why I suggested to her that perhaps she needs to get out and talk in person to firsthand witnesses instead of just sort of taking a look at it from outside the ketchup bottle, coming into conferences, writing about experiences from a sort of friendly, skeptical perspective. And we need that. As I said to Sarah, we absolutely need that. But when you do the kind of talking to people that you just described, you get an entirely different feeling. It doesn't just become about armchair skepticism anymore. It's up close and personal. How do you cope with that yourself? You know, how do you manage to retain any sort of sense of objectivity while you're in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I do have to step back. That's to be a lot dealing with this. I've been researching UFOs for most of my life. I looking back, it's been like 35 years. So, you know, it's become sort of normal for me to a certain extent. I've had my own sightings, you know.
Yeah, how many people do you estimate you have had conversations with about their firsthand experiences, say, since you first took an interest in all this? Can you just, you know, just even a round figure, like hundreds? Or?
As far as conversations, well over 1,000, I would say. As far as, you know, more formal interviews, several hundred at least. So,
after a while, a person, and this is what I've found as well, I haven't done as serious as interviews as you have, but I've been talking with people all my life about it. When they open up to you, after so many hundred times, you just start to, or at least I do, you just get to the point where you can't help but think that at least some of them are being perfectly honest and sincere, and that there really is something strange going on.
Right. I mean, there was one time I was interviewing this lady, I'll call her Wendy, crazy encounters. I mean, full on. She had sightings. People around her were having sightings, her friends, her family. She moved into the Acton area. There was a wave of sightings. She says, that always happened. And she's telling these amazing stories about, you know, being abducted by greys her whole life, hybrid babies. She said she woke up, there were greys around her bed. She jumped up, picked one in the neck, and it fell down, apparently dead. She felt really bad as the Grays, you know, pulled away and left. She had another experience where she was being pulled up into a UFO and woke up halfway up there, dangling, you know, hundreds of feet up in the sky, came very angry and frightened and demanded that the Grays put her back, which they did. She said that they were very surprised that she woke up and they instantly put her back. So I'm transcribing this interview. I'm sitting up in my third-story condo in Canoga Park. This is, you know, some years ago. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know. I know this lady believes she's telling the truth. I believe it, but this is kind of crazy. And I got this really strong impulse to run up under the roof of my condo, which I did. You know, it's a very strong impulse. I've never had that before. Grabbed my glasses. I'm slightly nearsighted. And darned if I didn't get up there within 10 seconds, the most, I'm guessing, this giant yellow light appears, maybe 100 feet away, 50 feet, 100 feet up. I mean, real close, like across the street. And it sent me a blast of, like, a telepathic message, honest to God. It was like, it's us. You know, you didn't believe it. Look at this. Watch this.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's like starting around and disappears and leaving me, you know, of course, speechless. And I called her up. I'm like, you wouldn't believe what happened. She's like, oh, my God. You know, I'm telling you. I'm telling you. And I'm like, well, let's do it again. You know, can you call him again? And she did. And I had my best sighting ever.
Right. I think we talked about some of that last time you were on as well as, why did you forget to take your camera or
right.
video recorder? Or, you know, there's still this pervasive lack of verifiable evidence for all of this. And it just astounds me that there are so many people having these experiences and yet there's really nothing but their stories to verify.
Well,
there's some trace stuff, okay, but nothing.
Well, there's a guy in this book.
Extraterrestrial.
There's a case in this book. It doesn't prove it's extraterrestrial by any means. But the guy's Joe Gardner, really interesting guy from West Virginia, Huntington, West Virginia. He's had encounters his whole life and has been able to photograph them. It's funny, he's, you know, carrying around a camera because they're appearing all the time. Usually they, you know, it slips away. He looks away. He grabs his camera and the thing darts off. One time he had this thing hovering outside his window, called his girlfriend. She saw it. He called his friend across the street. He saw it. And his friend had a camera. They had just photographed a saucer and got a good picture of it. He points the camera at the UFO and it fails.
We're going to fail in a moment, Preston. If we don't do this, more to come with Preston Dennett and Gene and Randall. You're in the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attention all radio listeners who still need food supplies. If you've thought about the implication of food-related supply chain disruptions and are concerned about the coming quarantines, this will be the most important message you will ever hear. Here's why. In the next few days, all Americans will face extremely hard choices. If we've learned anything from China and Italy, it's that quarantines and enforced lockdowns are just a few days away here in the U.S. Listen, while dehydrated food is becoming scarce, you can still get enough open pollinated heirloom seeds to grow a one-acre crisis garden. The truth is, growing nutrient-dense vegetables in the days ahead may actually be the single most important thing you do. Go to SurvivalSeedBank.com and watch the new video to understand the nature of the threat. This could be life-saving. Lockdowns can last from 6 to 8 weeks. Get free bonus seeds. Special quarantine reports too. Go to SurvivalSeedBank.com. That's SurvivalSeedBank.com.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
President Trump says he's considering an enforceable quarantine to keep people safe in the areas hardest hit by the coronavirus.
I am now considering, and will make a decision very quickly, very shortly, a quarantine because it's such a hot area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. We'll be announcing that one way or the other fairly soon.
He says he's spoken with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo about the quarantine, but the governor says that actually hasn't happened yet. The president says other states are also at risk.
There's a possibility that we'll do a quarantine short term, 2 weeks, on New York, probably New Jersey, certain parts of Connecticut. Restrict travel because they're having problems down in Florida. A lot of New Yorkers going down. We don't want that.
This is USA Radio News.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
800-871-3291. 800-871-3291. Again, that's 800-871-3291.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
This is Jerome Clark, author of UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Preston Dennett, isn't that almost always the way it goes, trying to get a good photo of a UFO? Something fails or you just get a big blur?
Yeah, this guy did it 4 or 5 times. Actually, every single time he pointed his phone at the object, it went down to zero. The camera would not function. Turned it away, it goes right back to normal.
That is so bizarre. I mean, there's something up with that, because have you ever read that little warning that they have, you know, on electronic devices where, I mean, I'm just kind of paraphrasing here, but, you know, it says this device conforms to be a Class B computing device and must accept radio frequency transmissions from outside, right? It's almost as if these things have to be built in order for whatever it is out there to be able to cut them off. But that kind of implies that there's this giant conspiracy on the part of, you know, the high-tech manufacturers to be able to hack into our devices, right?
It doesn't surprise me. I mean, if computers and so on actually came from ETs, what perfect way to sort of spy on us. They could be doing, reading all our computers, all our emails.
Yeah, I mean, or even maybe they just know the hack. Right? Like maybe it's not that it necessarily came from them, but they know that it's there and are able to exploit it somehow, you know?
Yeah. I wrote an article. It's in one of my books, the Not From Here series, where people get phone calls from UFOs, which sounds crazy, but it fits right in with what they can do. You know, people hear the radio static up, the TVs, all kinds of electromagnetic instruments are affected. Why not phones?
That is so bizarre. Well, I've had some pretty strange calls on my landline in the last couple of months, but is it okay if I quote a couple of passages from your book?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
And my questions. Okay. Yeah, because I really like some of these. This is some one of the things that kind of struck me. And it fits right in with what you were saying about the one experiencer who'd got into a fight. Now, this one in your book, you call him Tim, and he recounts, he says, I had what I thought was a dream where the aliens had taken me up into the spaceship and they had restrained me on a table and they left the room. I got loose somehow. They hadn't restrained me fully. And I got up and I started walking around. And when they noticed I was walking around, well, one of them came at me and I punched him in the head. His head was soft, like a beanbag. When I punched him in the head, he went down. I think I killed it. Suddenly, I was fighting several of them. I was fighting them and I was beating them, physically hitting them. I remember one of them jumping toward me and he had like three or four fingers on each hand. I remember him jumping toward me and then I remember seeing like seven or eight other ones right behind him, all coming at me at the same time. I remember seeing his eyes, big black eyes right in front of my face. And I remember going backwards and that's the last thing I remember. And then when he woke up, he sort of thought it was a dream, but he had these like bruises and cuts on him and stuff.
Right. Yeah, that was one of his scarier experiences, the one that kind of really convinced him that these were physical experiences, because he'd been having a number of these kind of UFO dreams. He knew they were real. I mean, there was an experience when he was like 13 years old. It's crazy. He's been having them his whole life. He had a sighting when he was like five. Had a missing time experience once. He just wakes up outside his house. It's pouring rain. Turns out he's in the field where they keep the cows behind a locked gate. There's no footprints leading to him. It's a very wet, muddy day. And so he has to break back into his house to get inside. So a lot of stuff like that. One time he's like 13, 14 years old. It's 7 a.m. He's getting ready to do the hay baling like they do every morning. His little brother is standing or sitting next to him on the wagon, and Tim realizes his brother forgot his gloves. Tim says, go get your gloves. You'll need them to do the hay. His little brother runs inside. Suddenly, Tim's father runs out and says, where the heck have you been? And Tim says, I've been right here. What do you mean? And his father says, no, you haven't. We've been looking for you for an hour. He was physically gone. And at that point, Tim realized he had this huge pain in his leg. They discover he's got two scoop marks or like puncture wounds or something, but the flesh was actually missing. This is when he started having real memories of being on board a UFO.
Well, did they take him to a doctor? Obviously you would want to. I mean, you wouldn't want to leave your, you know, child standing there with these big scoops of flesh missing.
They thought perhaps a snake bit him, is what they thought. But as they looked at it, no, they cleaned out the wound, bandaged it up. It didn't require hospitalization, they didn't think. You know, they're a farm family.
Right.
So they're pretty industrious anyway. Little injuries like that are not the uncommon. They went out and checked the wagon, of course, for nails and stuff, wires. There was nothing there. But this is the sort of thing that was happening to him. And at this time, he started having memories of being on board UFOs. You know, he's in the control room, and they're darting around, and they're moving all over the place and just going crazy. And later he would have sightings where he'd see them up in the sky darting around and be like, shoot, that's exactly what it was like when I was inside it, the way they were darting around like that. He had one experience where he had one full day of missing time. They couldn't find him for a full day.
That is pretty strange. All right. And things do happen with children. I mean, at this point, we should probably also not forget that you've also wrote the schoolyard UFO encounters book as well. And I think that's what we talked about last time you were on. Really, really interesting stuff. So strange things do happen to children. I know an experience that I had when I was really young. How about you? Did you have any experiences when you were young yourself?
Me, not that I can really point to. No, you know, I've searched my head. I feel like there's something there. I do.
Well, that's almost encouraging because with so much that you've heard from other people, you know, it's at least you don't have the, I want to believe so much syndrome that, yeah, you know, you're making up and, you know, fabricating stories because you want to believe that something has happened. Right.
Yeah, that's actually my family.
Uh huh.
Yeah. You know, I don't have any memories of being abducted. I could have had missing time once I saw a ball of light. Didn't tell anybody. Don't remember driving home.
Oh, well, okay.
Didn't remember for a couple. Well, it's not that I didn't remember. I guess I didn't really remember it for a year or so. Just didn't think about it. It's pushed out of your mind like these things are. Certainly, I've heard witnesses tell me that same thing. So when it happened to me, I'm like, oh, okay, that's what this is like.
Happens all the time. You know, I'm just going to the store to pick up a loaf of bread, and 3 days later,
return with a puncture wound and stale bread.
So, tell us a bit about the kinds of aliens that are being reported, because when I was going through the book, I was finding that they seem to be mostly predominantly like the typical grays. Was there any others in your travels that you've run across?
Yeah, it is mostly grays in this book, for sure. My last book, Inside UFOs, also had mostly grays. That's what I hear mostly. It's 60-70%, I would say. Variations, for sure. Some describe tall grays, some describe shorter ones, some describe both. That's not at all unusual. Also, I would say second most common would be human-looking. There's at least 3 or 4 cases of that in the book. Some are very friendly. It's interesting because some of the witnesses feel like this is a terrible experience, about 2 or 3 in the book. Some feel like it was the best thing ever, at least 4, perhaps 5. And the rest feel it's kind of neutral. But yeah, there's praying mantis, a couple of reptilian cases, which are the most unusual, I would say, and kind of just weird humanoids. It's, you know, very strange.
What do you make of this beanbag head thing? Like, Gene, and Preston, have you, either of you guys heard anything like this before, where these grays don't seem to have much of a internal structure, but they're just kind of all soft and beanbag-like?
I have, yeah, sure. I mean, first, I think a comment that I remember vividly came from Travis Walton, who did the same darn thing and said it felt marshmallow-like, very squishy.
We have some squishy announcements here. But nothing to squeeze you. Those are really bad DJ puns. Preston Dennett, Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com. Do you feel like many of us? All the distractions in the world taking our minds and focus off what really needs to get done day to day? Well, Jeunesse has a dietary supplement called Mind to help with mental distraction, and it supports memory function. Go to GCNLife.com now to check it out. You're only at your best when your mind is at its best. Go to GCNLife.com or call toll-free 844-443-6637. That's GCNLife.com or 844-443-6637.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices. Our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
This is Leslie Kane, and I'm with the Coalition for Freedom of Information, and you are listening to the Paracast.
Preston Dennett is with us, and he's got a new book out, which is called Onboard UFO Encounters, True Accounts of Contact with Extraterrestrials. Since you mentioned Travis Walton, Preston, what's your assessment of him? That, you know, remains kind of controversial because he allegedly failed at least one lie detector test. What's your perception?
Oh, I'm thoroughly certain the case is genuine. It doesn't rest just on his testimony. There's a lot of witnesses. They've passed numerous lie detector tests. There was physical evidence at the landing site. Yeah, no doubt this is a real case. I think it's one of the better verified cases, really. And, yeah, he's a great guy.
Notice the big pause of silence there.
We've had him on the show. I liked him. I thought he was a very personable gentleman. It also sort of reminded me also of the conversations we've had with Calvin Parker, talking about the Pascagoula, Mississippi case. Sincere people, believable, and all that. We don't know if what they think happened to them, but certainly I'd believe what they tell me in terms of their perception of it.
Well, you know, his story matches up detail-wise with other accounts. It does have some unusual elements. The five-day thing is pretty unusual, but it's not unique. Each case I kind of take individually. Some cases become very well publicized, but most don't. There are a lot of people having that same kind of experience. Seeing grays and human-looking ETs together is not at all unusual, which turned up in the Travis Walton case. And fighting with a gray, punching in the face, well, that happened to Tim. There's another case in this book, Onboard UFO Experiences, a guy from England. Oh, man. Had experiences his entire life. And at one point, he's walking down the stairs to go to the bathroom. Bathroom's on the first floor on the other side of the house. And comes upon a gray standing there in the living room. And he runs up to it and throttles it, grabs his hands and starts wringing it by the neck. It starts screaming telepathically in his mind, "Get off, get off, get off me now." And its arms, he said, were windmilling side to side. But he had it by the neck for a good 5 seconds before he was knocked out from behind and he woke up in bed. So he's...
How do we know these aren't just like some kind of dreams then, or, you know, really vivid lifelike dreams?
He was awake. He was... So we know it's not a dream.
I mean, he woke up in bed, though. So how did we know that he wasn't having a dream of being downstairs with an alien and then he woke up in bed?
I don't think so, because, you know, his wife has had encounters as well. He's got a lot of accounts that have happened to him. I mean, we don't know for sure, do we?
But well, that's just the whole problem, isn't it?
You know? I mean, at some point you have to start taking a logical viewpoint. You have to look at this stuff and try and figure out what's going on. Could these be dreams? And certainly I've got every book on dreams I can have. I've written down all my dreams. I've done extensive research into dreams because of this, into sleep paralysis.
Right.
If you're going to point towards, you know, this being explained by dreams, the best explanation would be for sure sleep paralysis. Because that's when you wake up, you can't move, and yes, it does feel like you're in a different place, and you do sense figures around you. I've had this, actually, a number of times.
Oh. You've had sleep paralysis.
Oh, yeah, because I did a lot of research into dreams, and I started to try to do lucid dreaming. And so you kind of meditate, and you do all this stuff where you try and go out of body as well. I did research into that and got really good at it, actually.
Well, see, this is kind of encouraging again for me then when talking with you, because here you are, you're going, okay, well, I've done that research. I've actually experienced sleep paralysis. And instead of going, oh, yeah, I was abducted too, you're going, no, I could tell that this was still just me in a state of quasi-consciousness.
Yeah, you can absolutely tell. It's scary. And I can see why people might think it's aliens. And I wouldn't surprise me if there's a little bit of a bleed through here and there where people think for sure they're abducted by aliens, but and it was sleep paralysis. And for that matter, vice versa. People have an abduction experience and they're like, well, you know, probably just a dream. Mm. Because there are similarities. But you onboard UFO experience follows a pretty set pattern.
Okay, let's go into that. What's this pattern?
Yeah. There's sort of this element of being taken. You wake up paralyzed, right? Often this is in conjunction with, you know, it's not always just, you know, waking up. The same thing happens if you can be driving down the street, walking outside your house, or being in your anywhere. Some people see a UFO. This does not always happen. Some people have this UFO strike them with a beam of light. Some just have grays appear. At any rate, next thing they know, they find themselves aboard a UFO. Very few, I think this is really interesting, actually remember entering the object. It's a phenomena UFO researchers call doorway amnesia. Some people just seem to black out, or they're got aliens around their bed, and the room starts to change, almost morph into a UFO, or it's very strange. So there's something going on there. Again, I think people are being physically taken because they're not where they're supposed to be when people are looking for them.
Right. They're transported somehow from where they're found. And usually it seems to be, well, I shouldn't even say usually, because this can happen to people when they're out hiking. It can happen while they're sleeping. We hear a lot of ones where people are sleeping. But like you say, it happens when they're out driving, too. So,
right.
Yeah, we'd be too quick to say it only happens while people are in bed.
Right. So that's the first thing. It's called being taken, you know, pulled. Second would be the examination. This is what usually happens, probably 70% of the cases. People are usually undressed, laid out on a table, or a dentist chair-like device. Of course, the insides of UFOs have very similar descriptions. And those are certain sort of red flag details I look for. Some are well known, like the indirect lighting in round rooms. Others are not so well known, like, you know, what the portholes look like when looking outside of the UFO, or the control panels, or, you know, the room may change size. Little rare details lend authenticity to the independent accounts. So the examination is second. Third after that would be what you call the tour. People are guided around the ship, often to an observation deck, perhaps, or an engine room. That's not at all unusual. Third after that would be the message section of the encounter. People are given messages of some kind. Often it's about warnings of disasters, or perhaps spiritual information of some kind, healing, out-of-body stuff, past lives. This sort of thing is not unusual. Prophecies, even. Following that, it's usually something like, you know, we will meet again, and people are put back. So it's got that kind of set pattern. Though I have to say, probably 20% new information, 10, sometimes more in each case.
Except for in Teresa's case in your book. Now, this is one of the things I was looking for when you were talking about messages. Now she was saying when asked if ETs have given her any messages or if the encounters changed her in any way, she apologized and said she didn't receive anything from these encounters. So she didn't feel any unreasonable fear or that the aliens are evil, but the only conclusion she felt is that they are very advanced. And I'm assuming technologically there. I'm not sure if she meant technologically or evolution-wise, like evolved as a species, or both.
Yeah, I presume both. Certainly the one thing everyone in the book agrees upon, that these guys are advanced technologically and mentally, I guess you might put it, very powerful. And even if, you know, people say, oh, they're angels or demons or aliens or, you know, some mysterious intelligence, that's the one thing they all agree on. I like Teresa's case because it's very typical. She's, you know, had repeated experiences where she's pulled on board a UFO, presumably. She didn't think so at first. She didn't know what was happening until she had a close-up UFO sighting and felt that same sort of buzzing feeling that she always feels prior to being taken. And the only thing she remembers is being physically examined. That's it. No grand messages, you know, no tours, no trips to other planets or anything like that. Very basic. There's a couple of cases like that in the book, and I think that's the most common thing I hear is sort of this physical examination. I think that speaks towards the aliens' agenda of genetic hybridization, which is certainly one of their main agendas. They seem to be very interested in the human body and our DNA.
Right. We can get to this a little bit later. I believe I recall running across, and I didn't make specific notes on it.
Let's cover this on next segment. We'll pick back up on
it.
More to come with Preston Gene Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
I don't even recognize myself anymore.
I'm really worried about him. His addiction. I haven't seen him like this. Ever.
Hey, look, I never wanted to start using. I knew the drill, but I was out of options.
I just want to tell him it's not your fault. There are people out there who can help. People who have felt your pain. They know what you're going through.
This has to stop. I'm losing everything. Everyone.
You've been strong your whole life. You can do this, but you have to reach out for help.
It's time. I can do this.
Addiction is a disease, and diseases need treatment.
Call Quit Drugs 321 now at 800-377-1456. 800-377-1456. That's 800-377-1456. Paid for by the Detox and Treatment Helpline.